The wait has ended. PGAtour.com now has Fantasy One and Done. No other fantasy format has gained as much attention as this one. Here's how it works. It's totally free. Select one golfer per tournament. Once he's played, he's unavailable for the rest of the year. Sign up now at fantasygolf.pgatour.com. Also, before we get started, a reminder to swing by OGO.com and check out their Cirrus stand bag. I just got mine in the mail. It came in a huge box, and it actually feels like there's nothing inside of it. This bag is the lightest bag I've ever felt. Go to find out more at OGO.com.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast, another double podcast week. I've never in the history of the game of golf wanted to hear about somebody else's round at a golf course more than I do having Kyle Porter back. Kyle, first of all, you're going to be suspended from this podcast after this episode. We've already heard way too much from you.
This is like in 50 years, I'm going to be like Gary Player. Like I was on the No Laying Up podcast 354 times.
I've done it more times than any other person in the world. This is by popular demand, though, because you were there at Augusta National covering the Masters for the second time. Is that right?
In person? Second time, yeah, in person, yeah.
And you literally won the lottery and got selected to play on the Monday after the Masters. We've done a wrap-up podcast on the Masters. You've done a wrap-up podcast with Shane Bacon on the Masters. So I definitely want to start with this. Everyone's dying to hear about what it's like to play Augusta National. I'm sure people have heard, you know, bits and pieces along the way. But again, golf stories are usually terrible. I don't need a hole-by-hole, shot-by-shot, but I think some people listening to this might want that. But first, I want to go back to how you found out that you won the lottery.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, because they you have to put your name in. It's a little bit not underground, but you have to kind of know what you're doing. You got to go downstairs, put your name in into this box, and then they pull it out. I believe they drew on a Friday morning or Friday afternoon, and they announce over the loudspeaker in the big media room that they have drawn the names and that they're posted downstairs. It's kind of like middle school, like when you see if you made the team, you know, like you got to go look and see if it's posted. And so I was in the middle of something, and I didn't want to appear too eager. Like you don't want to play it cool. You don't want to be like running down the stairs, even though literally every person in there wants to run down the stairs. And so I thought, okay, whatever, I'll go look later. I probably didn't make it anyway. And our buddy Kevin Van Valkenburg walks up and says, so we're supposed to play in a foursome together on Monday with Bacon and Brendan Porath. And he walks up and just goes, well, we need a new fourth because you're playing Augusta National on Monday. And I said, if you're messing with me right now, I'm going to kill you. And he was like, I would not joke about such a thing.
Just thinking about that, that's like making me cringe that he would have joked about that. Continue. Sorry.
And so we kind of celebrated about that. And then I went downstairs to verify. And it's just such a surreal thing because you're in the middle, you're just grinding, you know, over the week, just writing stuff. And then like this incredible thing happens in the middle of it, and it didn't really hit me, I don't think, until like later that night when I got back to my house that I was staying at, or maybe even like the Monday morning when I was driving to the course, just because of how many other things are going on. But that was the way that I found out that I was playing.
How many people enter it roughly, or how many media members are there there?
Well, it's hard to know how many people enter it, because once you've won it, you can't win it again for 7 years. And so not everybody, like Sean Martin was there for PGAtour.com, and he played it, I think, in 2011 or 12. And so he wasn't allowed to re-enter. So I really don't know. There's probably 1,000 media members there. I don't know. I'm just throwing a number out there. Maybe less. It's hard to know with photographers and stuff, but then I think it was 7 groups of 4, so 28 people that played the course on Monday.
That's not great odds. Like, was anybody bitter? Like, did you like sense some bitterness from people that had entered for many years and didn't get it?
Not really. I'm sure there was, but a lot of the people, like I talked to Doug Ferguson, Associated Press, and some just other people that had been coming obviously forever. And a lot of them had played it even twice, you know, but most of them had played it at least once. So thankfully, all of the people that I talked to, there wasn't a lot of like angst or, you know, hatred towards me that I know of anyway.
What's the first thing you did? Like, did you like call your wife or what? Yeah. What do you do when that happens?
Yeah, I texted my wife and then a couple. Well, I think I texted our group chat and then a couple other close friends that.
Did you text us before you texted your wife?
Probably. Yeah, I think so. I think I might have actually. I think I did. I really do.
Did you have to move a flight around?
Oh yeah. I didn't even wait to find out what time so here's the thing. Like, I didn't want to. No matter what time my tea time was, because you don't know until later on. I didn't want to be thinking about my flight at all. My flight was at 4:30. So even if I teed off like at 7 in the morning, I just didn't want to think about it. And so I moved it to like 9:30 that night so that I knew I would have plenty of time to get there. But that was like $200 to do that. It could have been 2,000. I didn't really care. Like it didn't matter.
You're paying that fee. That's not even a question.
Yeah.
How did you possibly focus on the remaining 2 days of the event when you had that looming?
Well, that's what Bacon came up and said. I'd like to make an announcement to everyone. Kyle Porter is going to write nothing good for the rest of the week. And it was true. It's very difficult to I don't know. I was lucky in that it was like a really good ending. Like the weekend was awesome, I felt like. So you're pretty locked in. And then after I filed my last thing on Sunday night, it's like I'm just totally ejected. Like I didn't write anything on Monday. I didn't think about anything on Monday. And I mean, that was obviously all I was looking forward to.
Did you sleep at all on Sunday night?
Well, we were up. We were staying at the this little house about 30 minutes away with a ton of people. And we're hanging out just spewing takes, just flaming takes at like 2:30 in the morning. And Porath and Bacon and Van Valkenburg were like, bro, go to bed. Like you need sleep. Like you cannot. I set five alarms, I think, on my phone. And my tea time wasn't until 11:30. So I wasn't worried about that. But I didn't want to be out there like groggy and just. You know how your body feels like really tired when you've stayed up till 4 in the morning? Yeah. I didn't want to feel like that walking around Augusta. So I got plenty of sleep. I did wake up like I could not – I woke up at like 6:45 and could not go back to sleep because I was just giddy about the day. So that – I mean that part of it, it was impossible to go back to sleep.
So we joked about it on the preview podcast. I asked you if you were bringing a scripting or what you were doing for scripting. You brought a scripting. You were ready for it.
Well, I was concerned because the only hat I brought was an Oakmont hat, so I didn't know if that was a faux pas to wear like another club's hat to Augusta. But one of the guys that I played with wore a Pine Valley shirt, and so I figured that I was okay. I was safe with the Oakmont hat. But yeah,
such a like a top 100 course guy move to wear the Pine Valley shirt at Augusta. I respect that though.
Yeah, it was a power play, but. Yeah, I had the scripting laid out. I felt like it looked a little Matt Kuchar-ish with the light blue and the light yellow and the dark blue pants. I was concerned about that. I went back and forth on it, but that was I bought that polo this week at the Masters in the pro shop. So I decided to go with it anyway.
So. When you show up, like people, you know, the players, caddies and whatnot, when they show up at the Masters, everyone notes how everyone working there knows who everyone is. And I even heard like within the press center this year, like people are, when you're getting ready to ask a question in a press conference, the moderators know your name and whatnot. When you arrived on the scene, did people like know who you were and were waiting for you? Or what's it like driving up Magnolia Lane? How do you get to where you need to go?
Yeah, it's very structured and like everything is planned out and like the security guard, you know, he's got a list. You're on it. You're either on it or you're not. If you're on it, you drive down Magnolia Lane, which is just the coolest. And then you get up there and people, you know, take your clubs out of your car, and it's a very first class, obviously, experience. But I thought the coolest part, and Augusta does such a good job of this, of just treating you like you are a member there for the day, and that was really they don't have to do that, you know, like that's just and I think people saw this in the way they did the media center. They are very adamant about, hey, the media is important. Like, people writing about our event is important. And I think that that's something that has always been important to them there. And it's not like that everywhere. I think that, you know, other places you go, it's like, oh, we got to put up with the media or whatever. And that's not necessarily it's not at all the case there, which I think is really cool. And just, I think the Monday outing just kind of caps that off of how well they treat you there. And I don't know, to me, that's, as a media member, that's really special. And I think we're all obviously really appreciative of that.
That's what, I mean, Augusta's got a very long, deep, confusing history as far as, you know, not allowing women members and race issues in the past. However, the only time I've been there, I was blown away at how genuine it felt that they wanted the people attending to enjoy the event.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. And it's not like, I don't even know how else to describe that other than, everyone knows about the concession stand prices being cheap and kind of that code of, you know, you set your chair down, it's going to stay there and whatnot. So it doesn't surprise me to hear that, you know, they want you to walk away from that saying the things that you're saying about it. So,
yeah. And well, Bacon and I were talking about that. I think that the Augusta thing gets, it's a little overwrought. It's a little kind of, I don't know, people just get crazy about it, but their members and the people that put on the event, they are genuine about just protecting the tournament, protecting, you know, like the experience of the tournament. Like that's a genuine, legitimate thing. And I think that people say what they want, but that makes for a really just tremendous experience for the patrons, for the media, for the players, for everybody. And I don't think it's definitely not like that everywhere. And so I think people get, I don't know, people get crazy about it, but I certainly appreciate it. I think it's awesome.
So they give you a card that tells you your tee time. You had 11:30 tee time. They tell you to arrive at 10:30. Were you like waiting outside the gate at 10:29?
Oh yeah. I'm there at 10. Yeah. Yeah. I actually drove over and stopped at like a gas station 2 minutes away and timed it so that I could be there for every I seriously did that.
I believe you.
So yeah, I've got everything ready to roll. I've got my GoPro, everything's just, you know, perfectly set up so I can get out of the car and get up to the champions locker room and get ready for the day.
So you walk into the champions locker room, describe the scene.
Oh, it's small. It's really small. And it's just very ordinary, but you've got all these gold nameplates on these wooden lockers of some of the best ever. You know, Jordan Spieth and Arnold Palmer are together. Phil Mickelson's got his own locker, which was hilarious. I took a thumbs up selfie with Phil's locker. There's a shower in there. There's it's very intimate and there's all sorts of, I think they sent out photos. I think Augusta National has put photos out there, but it's a very just intimate experience with lots of old memorabilia that is just kind of historical stuff to Augusta. So it's a really I don't know, it's hard to describe. It's just very, it feels very surreal when you're there, honestly.
And so do you went in there and changed, and then do you go out to the range, do you go to the putting green, what's next? I really actually do care about all this part of the process.
I actually planned this out. I knew I had an hour, and so I thought, okay, I'm gonna spend 20 minutes at the pro shop, 20 minutes kind of exploring, just going where, just anywhere really. And they're cool about that. Like you can't go anywhere, but like you can walk around and check stuff out. And it was really neat. And then 20 minutes on the range. Well, the Pro Shop had not put out their ANGC stuff yet, which, I mean, that's what you're there for. You're not trying to buy like a, you know, Masters shirt. Like, you could have done that the last 7 days. And so I just skipped that, kind of walked around a little bit, checked out the regular locker room, checked out the dining area, and then went out to the range and met my caddy. I got to say, on the range, didn't miss a shot.
Strike
just,
show.
Just so locked in. And I think my caddy was like, I think he was excited because you don't know what you're getting out there as a caddy. And it went real badly later, which we'll talk about. but it felt, you know, it was great to begin with. And so we just chatted. I didn't hit a ton of balls, but checked out the putting green, hit a bunch of chips. I was very concerned about the chipping there. Hit some sand shots. So we just kind of hung out and, you know, he's got a 3-month-old, I've got a 4-month-old, so we talked about that. And I don't know, it's just you're trying to just drink it all in, you know, because you've only got so much time out there, so you're trying to touch, not literally touch, but experience every single thing that you can with your caddy, with the other people out there. And I think my attitude generally was just to try to be laid back and just enjoy it, which I think I did pretty well. But yeah, that was kind of the pre first tee shot routine.
A quick break to talk to you guys again about the Callaway Chrome Soft golf ball. Callaway has been the fastest growing golf brand since 2013. There's a reason you see these guys dominating social media every single day. The Chrome Soft golf ball has been a major part of that. It is extremely fast, incredibly soft, and unbelievably easy to control. Guys like Phil, Patrick Reed, Thomas Peters have all switched to the Chrome Soft. We saw what Thomas Peters just did to Augusta National with the Chrome Soft. You have to be willing to change to get better. Chrome Soft and the new Chrome Soft X are in stores now at CallawayGolf.com. Chrome Soft, it's the ball that changed the ball. And so what are the nerves like as you make your way over to that first tee box?
Well, it wasn't bad until the very moment that I'm standing over the ball and it hits you. I mean, it just hit me like so hard. I'm staring at the ball. I can see the scoreboard with the flags coming up in the back, like off to the right. Mm-hmm. And it hit me just all at once, right before I'm about to take the club back. And I just blew one over the scoreboard because I was so just jacked up.
Did they do the four, please? Kyle Porter now driving.
No, they don't do that. They took our picture, and there's a bunch of people out there to greet you. I mean, it was a really just a very professional experience. Like it was really, really cool. But yeah, I was scared out of my mind over that first tee shot.
So set the scene. What is your handicap? What are your expectations for the day? Within our group chat, we set the over under, I think, at 89.5 for the day for you. What was your I know you probably didn't want to think about a score too much, but what did you expect for the day?
I expect, just from talking to other people that had played there, I expected to break 90. I shoot between 80 and 90 at pretty much most places that I play, unless it's like when we played Oakmont from the tips, I didn't break 90. But like at a normal golf course, and because Augusta from the members tees is not long, it's 63. I got the scorecard, 63-65 from the members tees. So it's pretty short. I mean, I think we talked about that on this podcast. And so I just figured that I'd be long enough to make up for some putting or chipping struggles to break 90. But yeah, it didn't go so well.
Like, in hindsight, would you have preferred to play it from the members tees where you did, or would you have rather played the tournament tees?
No, the members tees. I think it would have been a slog from the pro. It just would have been like, I think, a lot more miserable.
Yeah. All right. So you blow the first shot. Yeah, we don't have to go hole by hole, but what are the highlights from the front nine? I guess so. The first few holes. How long did it take you to calm down, or did you ever calm down?
I think by the fourth tee box, so the par three, the fourth, I hit a really good 7-iron there and made par. And that was kind of the first time that I was like, okay, like I just made par here. Like I can, you know, you can do this. And then I one of the hardest things, and I didn't realize this, you can't know it until you get out there, but every second shot you have is either on like a upslope or a severe downslope. And so you can't, Jordan Spieth talked about this, I think, at Hawaii, you can't, you never have a flat lie. Like, it, and it makes it, for somebody who doesn't play that often, it makes it really difficult to know when to like choke up just a little, or where to put your feet or whatever. So I didn't hit my shots into the green that well. I did make a, so on number nine, I caught the downslope there. I probably hit one, I had like 95 in, so I hit one about 305 or something like that. And just flubbed the chip so bad. Like, didn't even get it up the hill. Didn't even hit the false front. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because they grow the grass back towards the tee boxes too, right? Does that make it more difficult to make contact with the ball, was what I was going to ask.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful, but it's very different than hitting on even like a regular nice course. So anyway, I chip over on the ninth green, and then I made a 50-foot putt coming back off the, like, from the fringe for par on number nine. So that was pretty awesome. It's probably gonna go down the hill. Like, if it didn't go in, I was gonna have to chip back up, but it caught the cup and went in. So that was pretty awesome.
So what's the speed of the greens like? Did they cut them that morning, or did they let it go after probably having it, you know, super fast for Sunday?
Yeah, I think they let it go because it wasn't – I mean, it was fast, but I've played other courses where – like, Oakmont was probably faster. I think I played Colonial one time the day before that tournament, and that was close. I mean, it was pretty similar to that. So it wasn't obscene. And I think any putting like difficulties that you might have are kind of negated by the fact that you have a caddy. So like, if you don't have a caddy out there, then you're going to hit the wrong, like, your caddy is basically telling you, okay, dye it right here, and then it'll funnel down to the hole. And you don't, I can't read the greens out there. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. That was one thing that surprised me. You'll have putts that are uphill or that look like they're uphill that my caddy is like, hit this at a regular speed because the grain's going this way and you know, whatever. And so that was tough. Like, that part of it would have been impossible without a caddy. I did hit the Rory cabins on 10. We should probably talk about that.
Can we talk about how, well, first of all, I could not have been more excited for somebody to play a round of golf. Like, I was thinking about it all day, and this was the day after the Masters. And it was like 5:30 for me, and so I sent like a message to our group saying, like, I said, four please on the tee, Kyle Porter now driving. And as I was going through my evening, like, I had to go like shopping for a new rain jacket, and like, I was trying one on and it wouldn't fit, and I was getting frustrated, and I was like, Porter's playing Augusta National right now. Here I am, like, running errands. And for the first time, I got, like, upset. Like, I was really excited for you. But then about 2 hours into your round, I photoshopped your face onto Rory's face of him hitting the shot from the cabins. And so this is probably Porter right about now. As soon as you get off the course, you come and tell us, yep, you found the Rory cabins on the left.
Oh, yeah. And it's worse because the tees are so much farther out. I pulled a drive so bad on number 10. That I was over there, and one of my playing partners said, hold on, just stay right there. I'm going to take a picture of you. And, this is the Rory shot. And it was so bad. But I ended up making quad on 10, which is just, it was egregious. But then Amen Corner, you know, I think that I wrote this, it's going to come out, I don't know when you're posting this, but it's going to come out later this today or this week or whenever. The tee box on 13 is the coolest spot on the course. And I think a lot of people have said that. Pros have talked about that a lot. But it's so serene and so quiet. And you just get a different perspective of 11, 12, and 13 that you've literally never seen before.
I was going to say, because that's really the only place you can't get to. 12 green and 13 tee are the only places on the course as a fan or a media member you can't get to.
Right. I just wanted to stay back there and like just tee balls up for people walking through. Like, it was so cool to be back there. And then
You skip past 11 though. I want to hear about 11 and 12. I want to hear about those shots. Because 11, the members tee is a totally different hole, right?
Yeah, I hit 3 wood on 11 and it almost reached the water, like down the left side.
Is the tee set to the left, the members tee then? How do you get around that corner? Or is it not much of a corner from that angle, I guess?
Yeah, there's really not. Okay. I kind of drew a 3 wood a little bit, and it rolled all the way down to near the water. I had about 100 in or 95 in. I mean, if you hit a decent tee shot from the members' tees, you're going to have like 95 to 110 into all of these holes.
Right.
Like for somebody like us. So I had like 95 in, I made a triple from there, which is just unbelievable. I hit it in the sand on the back right. And I didn't have it. My caddy goes, yeah, I probably wouldn't go for the pin on this one.
He had gotten accustomed to your game at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. He was not as delighted as he was like 2.5 hours ago. So I pitched out in like three putt. I don't know what I did. It was bad. And then the groups kind of, it kind of bottlenecks at 12 because obviously everybody's taking pictures. Yeah. And I mean, it's where you want it to bottleneck. Like you want to just hang out there.
Right. But you got to think about that shot so a little longer though.
Yeah. 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 You do. I was thinking about like the 80 others that I had already hit. The tee shot at 12, like, it looks a little different when you're standing over the ball because that green, like the green doesn't look that small. And then you're standing over it and you're like, oh, that's pretty small. Like, I don't really know where to land this. And I think I hit a 9-iron from, it was 140, it was playing like 147 or something like that, and hit it to the middle of the green, but it spun back to front left. And so you have to putt through the collar. And I three putted from there because it's just you have to. I mean, it's really kind of a if you're on front left and the pin's front right, or you're front right and the pin's front left. It's a crazy difficult putt. So yeah, I made bogey there.
I mean, at any point during this stretch, do you, while you're playing the shots or anything, do you forget kind of where you are, or do you kind of come out of the fact that, you know, this is like one of the most hallowed places in the entire game, or are you totally aware of that the whole time?
No, you're aware of it the whole time. I mean, it's kind of eerie to be there without any other people there, because the only time I've ever seen it is with, you know, tens of thousands of people. Even early in the morning when you're out there, like we used to go out as fans and set up our chairs, and being there early, it's more peaceful, but there's still a ton of people everywhere. And so it's so like it really is surreal to see a place like that empty. I mean, I think I said this in our chat, but it's like going to like the best movie ever without anybody in the movie theater. And it's just like it's a weird feeling. But it's also amazing. And yeah, you don't really, I mean, I think if you're like grinding over a putt, like you can maybe forget about it, but then you look up and you're like, oh yeah, you know, this is where I am.
So what did you do on 13? There's like a few holes, like 13, 15, 16 are all holes I need to hear the play by play on.
13, I hit 3-wood into the pine straw, and I think my biggest regret of the day is not hitting driver off that tee and trying to cut the corner.
Is it look doable, like from that?
Yeah. Okay. My caddy just handed me a 3-wood because I think he was like, you're ejecting and I don't want to be part of it. So I hit 3-wood into the pine straw, and then I pulled a 3-wood like off the property. And then I hit another 3-wood from, he was like, you should hit another one from here. It was basically the Mickelson shot, like through a couple of trees. And I hit put a 3-wood over the green. So I finally just walked up there and dropped and chipped up and one putted for like a double or triple or whatever. I think 13 was the most frustrating part of the day for me because I really wanted to play 13 and 15 well, just because those, you know, like those are the stories, right? Like, yeah. Nobody cares what you did on like 7. people want to hear about 13 and 15. And if I had one hole that I could do over again, it'd be that one.
So take us through the 15th hole.
Yeah, 15.
I've heard this story.
So I took out a little frustration on 14 and 15 tee box, hit two really good drives, and my drive on 15 ended up, you're about 50 yards ahead of the Masters tees, but my drive on 15 ended up, I was 191 out, and so I was about 2 feet from Sergio's divot on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I'm just Rory strutting up to this ball, like I am just out of my mind. I'm thinking like I'm gonna make a freaking eagle at Augusta, and I had Bacon's GoPro. I flipped it to my caddy and said, "This is my favorite shot on the course. Would you video it? Would you shoot me taking it?" Or taking the shot. And he said, oh yeah, of course. He's like, this is my favorite shot too. So I get up to it, and I stood over the thing for like 45 seconds. It was awful how long I stood, because I'm just thinking of like the thing that you don't want to think, but you can't help but thinking is I will literally never have this shot again in my life, yeah. ever. Yeah. And I just wanted to stick it close so bad. And so I take it back and I just laid the sod over it. It was awful.
You were playing, you'd play in the celebration. You were going to twirl and chase it.
Oh, I was going to run after it. I was already twirling as I took it back, and it didn't even get within 40 yards of the water. I mean, it was so bad. That. And I look back at my caddy goes, well, I hate it when that happens.
He hadn't checked out yet on you?
Yeah, no, he should have. I ended up pitching it up hitting it up with a sand wedge from there and two putting for par. But it was just if I could have one shot back, it would be that one. Just because I love – like there's been so many cool memories of guys over the years – walking up the incline on 15, standing on top of that hill and hitting career changing shots. And like, I wanted to, that was the shot that I wanted to hit well. And it was just so bad. So that was frustrating. But then I went to 16 and I hit a ball about 2 feet from the Saturday pin, which is, it's impossible to do. You can't do it.
You can't get to that spot.
And my caddy said, you could have sold that shot on Saturday for $100,000 to somebody. And I said, yeah, I know, but I wish it would have caught the ridge and come back down. So my putt on 16, I actually kind of turned my back to the hole and putted it back towards the Tiger tree and just kind of died it at the ridge. And it went all the way down and it still went 5 feet past. And I made that one coming back for par. So nice. I parred 15, 16, 17, which I was really excited about. And then finished up with a bogey on 18. But we had an awesome group. Like that really, I think that kind of makes your round, like who you're with. We had Mike Johnson from Golf Digest, who actually played in a U.S. amateur back in the, I think he said 70s. And then a couple other guys. One of our guys shot 79, which was really impressive. And then another guy that was there also. So. It was just all time, just the greatest day ever. I shot 95, but I didn't care at all. It was a blast. I was surprised that the course was not, it wasn't difficult. Like what I've told people is whatever you shoot at, like if you go to your regular course and say, I played pretty well today. Like if that number for playing pretty well is like say 84, like that's what you would have shot if you played pretty well at Augusta. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't super difficult because of where the members' tees were and because you had a caddy helping you out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those pros are hitting like 4 iron into that green. You're hitting, like you said, you're hitting 7 iron and those par fives become 4.5s really for us. So I'm acting like I know a lot about playing for the members' tees at Augusta National, but I've seen the scorecard, and yeah, it seems quite doable. And I've talked to I have a family friend that's played there, and he says it's like yeah, I mean like 11, it's not nearly the same hole as what they play,
right.
But I mean it's kind of it'd be fun to play Augusta with that kind of advantage, right? Like you said, if you play it from the tips, it's probably not that fun for you. I would like to obviously like to play it from both, but it would probably be more enjoyable. Like if you get the chance to go after 15, get the chance to go after 13 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, was there any part of it that was maybe like even slightly overrated or kind of like you would built a certain part up in your head and you're kind of like, oh, well, I mean, that's a little different than what I thought it would be like.
I mean, not really.
Didn't think so.
The one thing that's different is, and my caddy was talking about this, but right after the tournament, and you don't notice this ever, but a lot of the course is kind of worn down from people walking there and putting their chairs there all week. And it takes a while, obviously, to get that grass to be lush again. But I mean, that's really the only thing, like the wear and tear from the tournament is the only thing that is probably something that you wouldn't expect to see just because I had never really thought about it.
And what about underrated? Something that kind of surprised you, like you didn't realize you had that kind of respect for something out there maybe?
Yeah. I just underrated is I've always thought that Amen Corner is a little bit overrated.
Yeah.
Just because people – it's kind of like – well, people just talk about it a lot.
It's got a name, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like mainstream popular, and so you're like, eh, whatever, you know. But it was pretty awesome. Yeah. Like, it was awesome to I walked back and stood on the Masters tees at 13, and we took some pictures back there, and it's just such an intimate, like, cool spot to stand at.
So you wrap up. How long did it take you to play?
Like 8 hours. No, it was we teed off that. After I parred 17, I was three in a row, and I looked at my cat and said, can we play 18 more, or is that frowned upon here? we teed off at 11:30, and I think we got done at 4:45. Yeah, so
it's to be expected. No one's in a rush out there. You shouldn't be.
No.
Then what'd you do after the round?
After the round, I took a shower in the champions locker room because that'll literally never happen again. took some photos with my No Laying Up shirt on.
I saw that.
Expand the brand. And just drove back down Magnolia Lane, re-entered the real world. Yeah. It's just I don't know. It's I wrote about this, and I think I wrote about it more personally and intimately than I can speak about it. But it's just it's a really surreal, incredible experience that I know a lot of people will never get to have, and so I'm really grateful for it. And I don't say that in an arrogant way or anything. I think people know that, but I'm super grateful to have been able to do that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made it kind of fun for all of us, is we knew how much you appreciated it, how much you would enjoy it, and kind of following it. And from afar, I was very genuinely excited for you, and to hear the recap it's exciting, man. It really is. I mean, it's just an insight into something like exactly what you said. Not a lot of people are never going to get to do that. I don't picture myself ever getting that opportunity, but if it happened, man, I would be probably as giddy as you sound talking about it. So
it's an all-time experience, and really cool of Augusta to do that for the media members and everything. So
what was your best tour sauce move?
I twirled it pretty hard on number four.
Yeah,
like real hard. I was twirling on I hit every par three green. I think I was twirling on every par three. I think I after I hit the putt on nine, I kind of just raised my hand, and you know, there's like three people out there. So that was pretty good. I did the shot on 15 after I said they needed two caddies to come in and replace the divot to carry the divot back to its original resting place. But I looked back at the ground like it was like I had a
ground's fault.
Yeah, like I had a bad lie or something.
Mud ball.
It's like the cleanest fairway I've ever played on. And I just stared back at the ground like it was what had caused my 50-yard chunk. I did on 16. I tried to will my ball down the ridge a little bit. So I was a little tour saucy. But yeah, mostly the club twirls. I was pretty insistent on having some good club twirls.
Good. I'm proud of you. Yeah. All right. I think that wraps the actual round. I do want to talk to you a bit about covering the Masters in person. I've never done it, obviously. I've only been to Augusta once in my life, but it's got to be the most unique event to cover with like today's technology, in that even for the press, you can't take your phone out on the golf course. So you are completely in the dark, just like all the other patrons out there, as far as what's going on. The thought of that like drives me nuts. Like that fear of not knowing where to go exactly. Am I following the best story? Do you get any kind of anxiety being out there, like trying to figure out what to do?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the time. It's so, and you kind of accept it after a while. My first round out there, I was just, it was like being like off of drugs, or what I imagine being off of drugs is like, cause you're just like shaky and like so anxious about, and it's such a, that's a weird thing. Like I realize that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say out loud. But you have no input, and you have no output in terms of information. And that's like the whole deal, right? Is like having, like we deal in having information and distributing it, and you can't do that out there. And so you kind of just accept it after a while. We had a team of people running our live blog and doing all that stuff. So I'm glad for them. So I'm kind of out there just like collecting notes, collecting info to, cause I know that I'm going to do a bigger, longer piece later on, but it's way different than covering like a US Open or a PGA Championship, or even like when we were at the Ryder Cup. Cause you can, you know, I can fire off like pictures of you chasing down Ian Poulter at the Ryder Cup.
That's a coincidence.
Whereas I can't, obviously, at the Masters. But it's also cool because everybody is just the same out there. You know, we're following a group of a pairing of Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler right next to Aaron Rodgers. And the press is all with all the patrons. And there's no – it's just – it's a very I don't know. Everybody's just sort of the same and chasing around the golf and watching it and taking it all in together. So I do like that part of it. But as a media member, as a journalist, it makes it difficult sometimes.
Like you said, there's no special viewing places for the press anywhere. Like you are just, I mean, are there times you can't get to somewhere where you need to be able to, like you need to write a story about what you're doing.
Right.
Do you ever get somewhere where you can't see what's happening?
Yeah, 18. I mean, I tried to watch Sergio and Rose coming up 18, and it was – I almost got on poor ass shoulders to see what was going on. There are a couple of grandstand spots where you can go up with your press badge, but at the times that you're going out there, those are also – like other people can go up there too, like I think members and families and stuff like that. So by the time, you know, you get out to 12, like that's – that's those spots are taken, like you're not getting up there, and so we didn't really do that very much. But yeah, it is difficult. I don't think it's as difficult as you might think. I've never done it with Tiger. I think that would be impossible, but because everybody's pretty spread out and there's not a ton of people out there, it's probably a little bit easier than it seems. But coming up 18 was impossible on Sunday.
Yeah, because I mean, you basically have to pick what kind of story you want to go for. Like, I don't know, I'm not sure what you did Sunday, but like, if you went out and followed Spieth Fowler, like you ended up disappointed. Like, that was not the story. But you can't really know. You can see the scoreboards, but they're not as totally current. And you hear the roars, I would imagine, coming from all different directions. Got to be like, oh, what should I do? What should I do? And you don't have the information to follow it. I mean, just thinking about that kind of gives me a bit of anxiety. Do you ever want to just sit in the press center and watch it all on TV and fold from there?
Yeah, I do. But then I'm like, I'm at the Masters.
I know.
I'm going to go sit in the press center. You know, like, and you do, like, I did that on Sunday for the front nine, because you want to get at least an idea of
what to do.
Yeah, who's ejecting and like what the story is. Because like last year, the story was Spieth no matter what, right? Like if he wins or if he loses, the story is Spieth. And so that's sort of how I felt about Sergio this year. Once he went to the back nine, tied for the lead. And it was Sergio or Justin Rose. So you kind of use the media center to leverage what you're going to do out on the course. But I just... if I'm in the media center down the back nine on Sunday, it's like I might as well be at home. Like, why is CBS even sending me here? So, I might miss it one of these days. I'm gotten it both times. I've been with Sergio this year and Spieth last year, but yeah, you just kind of pick somebody and hope that ends up being the story.
Had you officially given up on Sergio? And if you did, at what point did you give up?
Yeah, he crosses the bridge on 13 into the pine straw. That's I'm ejected. I'm out.
What do you
yeah.
put his odds at the, or percentage chance of winning at that moment? I don't know what the math actually says, but if I said 99 out of 100 times he loses that, is that accurate?
I'd say it's less than that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say like 97, 96. I mean, it's still high. Like,
yeah.
It was just so improbable. Not even necessarily because of him. Like, if William McGirt is in the fairway on 13 next to Sergio and not Justin Rose, then I would think differently about it. But it's Justin Rose. It's not like he's a amazing player and he's just money down the stretch at so many tournaments. And so it was the combination of Sergio going bogey, bogey into the woods, as well as Justin Rose being in the middle of the fairway on 13. Like, run that back. I mean, yeah, run that back 100 times, and I bet Justin Rose wins 95 of them. I really do.
Yeah, do you think we kind of lose in our Sergio excitement, lose a bit of perspective on how is it fair to say Rose let it slip away?
Yeah, kind of. I think that's true. But also, Sergio missed a putt on 16. Sergio missed a putt on 18 that he could have made. Rose missed the putt on 13 and 17.
Can I say on that real quick? Because I know people were, you know, reacting quite harshly to Sergio's those two missed putts. I didn't think either of those putts were easy. And when you factor in the putt he made on 13, 14, 15, it's hard for me to look at those two putts and not say that's just kind of evening out. You know what I mean? I know it came at the end, but I don't view that putt on 16 was the wrong. It was close as he hit it, the wrong place to leave it. That left to right kind of downhill putt, and then 18. It looked ugly. The putt did not come close at all. I heard some people saying, I thought Bacon said it was 5 feet. I thought it was like a good 8 feet. Like, it was not a gimme by any means. So sorry I had to get that in there, but I don't feel like either of those putts were really Sergio letting anything get away.
Yeah, but I think when you compare him to the putts that Rose missed at 13 and 17, you could say this. Like, I feel like those were equal to what Sergio did. Like, you could have made him, but you missed him. Like, it wasn't. I didn't think Sergio's was any more egregious than those. Right. I don't really know what I'm saying anymore. But I thought they both missed putts that they could have and maybe in some cases should have made.
Yeah. I just think back to, and I don't have the play by play in front of me, but Rose letting that birdie get away at 13, and then the miss at 17, and then the bogey in the playoff in 18. Yeah, I mean, Sergio played incredible coming down the stretch there. And Rose hits – I mean, Rose birdied 16. That was some stones on 16.
Yeah.
Birdie 15, and then after Sergio 10. Made that eagle. But
can we put the – you guys – I haven't listened to the Monday podcast yet, but can we put the narrative of putting wins the Masters to bed yet?
It's been dead for a really long time. Really long time. I mean, it's those greens – it sucks because do you guys get it in the press center? Do you get the strokes gain stats?
Yeah.
Okay. So like, who dominated on the greens for the week?
Ricky Fowler.
Really?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, I heard you mention that on the Bacon Pod, but
he was number one going into Sunday, and he finished like 52nd on Sunday, and he still finished number one on the week.
Where did Sergio and Rose rank?
I don't even know. I don't think they were top 10.
Wow. Okay.
But they were the top three in greens and regulation: Sergio, Justin Rose, Paul Casey.
Yep.
1-2, 1-2, and six in the final leaderboard. So I don't know. Like, putting can win the Masters, but it's not a hard and fast rule. And then the other narrative, like, I just get sick of this generally. And we've talked about this a ton, but you know, Sergio choking down the stretch and whatever. Like, I was thinking about this. How many real chances has Sergio had to win major championships? Like, not okay, he finished in the top 10. Like, we I do this a lot. Like, I throw around the 22 top 10s. Go back and look at how many of those were real Sunday chances to win it. It's not that many.
Yeah, and it's not that many, though, because he had quite a few Sundays that he was in it and just completely petered out. Like, he was like one shot back of Tiger in 06, and I don't remember how bad Tiger beat him, but it was bad.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, on Sundays, like, he hasn't been within. I bet he hasn't been within two or three of the lead, but I don't know, five times. Like, the 07 Open, obviously he led, but I think that's his only 54 hole lead. So I just get sick of Sergio can't close. Well, the reality is he hadn't put himself in the position to close that often. I don't know. I was just glad that he did it the way that he did it at the very end with the birdie and beating somebody. So beating somebody like Rose, I mean, that's a legit thing.
Yeah. I'm not obviously not the biggest Justin Rose fan, but I think I probably should have given him some Twitter props. Not that it matters at all what I say, but he was a classy dude at the end there. Genuinely happy for Sergio. I know the crowd was rooting for Sergio, which is such a rarity for an American golf event. That had to be a tough, tough experience. I think what comes with he's won a major before, and I know I said before the day, this means the most for Sergio. This is kind of career defining for Sergio. Spieth has a major. Fowler's 28. I still strongly believe he's going to win majors. I mean, you know, Rose has his U.S. Open. For Sergio, this is I don't want to say this is it, but this is huge for him.
Yeah.
But there's no tournament that comes – there's nothing like no more benefits that come with winning a tournament than come with like winning the Masters. Just that whole champions dinner, the green jacket, and being able to come back there forever. Like, there's a – I don't know. If you take a straw poll, who would you rather win, the U.S. Open or the Masters? I don't think it's going to be close at all. Like, the Masters is – there's a reason why everyone wants to win that. To lose that in a playoff after making bogey on 17 and being close in prior years as well, that just – that has to sting. It really, really has to sting, and I kind of feel for him.
Yeah, I'm a – like, I feel like I'm a little bit on an island here. I'm a big Justin Rose fan. Like, I guess I understand why people kind of dislike him, but – I think he's a great player who has a really cool life, who is really kind to people and has always been generous to the media and has insightful things to say. Like, I just don't really get why people don't like him. I think he's got a cool swing. Like, I like the way he plays. I don't know if you know this, he's got a gold medal, which is pretty awesome.
I've heard that.
But yeah, I'm a big Rose guy. I really like him a lot.
It's not... he on the guys that I don't know, I wouldn't even say I dislike him. It's not anywhere near like ZJ Bubba Poulter territory at all. Like, not even close.
Is it the shades?
The shades are just kind of funny to make fun of. I mean, it's just kind of my thing. There's not much to comment on when it comes to him, so I go for the shades. That's really all I have. Yeah. But I don't know, some of the comments he's made in the past, he's just kind of. I forget, I think it was at Silverado a few years ago, where he said, like, you know, this course doesn't know I'm a major champion, you know? And I'm like, what does that even mean, man?
Well, at the Ryder Cup, when he said that the pins were say? The holes were cut too easy or something?
It was like a pro-am. The setup was similar to a pro-am.
Yeah, and he shot like a 73.
Yeah. No, it's not a strong dislike. I would... Of the four guys in that final four group, he was the fourth guy that I wanted to win, the last guy that I wanted to win. So, I don't know. It was awesome Masters. Where does it rank, like, historically for you as a viewer, a fan watching, as far as from non-Tiger Masters, as far as one of your favorites?
Like Masters only or all majors?
Masters, I was saying. I compared it to Phil 04. I still think Phil takes the cake on that one, but that was probably the best, most enjoyable finish to a Masters since that one for me.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back, I think it was the last time since 09, maybe, I read. I think Justin Ray had that in terms of last time somebody's had a putt, or both guys have had a putt in the final group to win it at the very end. So, I mean, if you look back at the last few years, we've gotten good Masters, but they haven't been as dramatic at the end. So for me, it's up there with I thought Phil in 10 was pretty great. But yeah, I mean, we talked about this beforehand. We've gotten some kind of lackluster Masters champions in the last 10 years, and Sergio is definitely not that. And the Indian, delivered. It was, I thought the Indian was right there with, Adam Scott and Cabrera in the playoff in 13, but I thought the entire afternoon was far better than what we got in 13 with those two.
Yeah. I almost tweeted this week, and I'm really glad I didn't, because I almost said, how depressing is it that in the last 6 years that Bubba's the only American to have won the Masters? Like, I completely forgot that Spieth won the Masters. It would have been like an all-time, well, actually, like a million responses immediately. My brain was fried the entire week. I dedicated way too much time to watching the Masters. I couldn't even, like, think. And there wasn't, like, much to say down the stretch other than just, like, type exclamation points, because it was so crazy how it was all unfolding. That moment on 15, that's gonna stick with me, man. To hit that shot from the top of that hill, to graze the stick and nail the eagle putt to come back and win the Masters, that does not get any better than that. It really doesn't. So this whole year is downhill after that. Do you?
Yeah, I'll
go ahead.
I'll never forget the shot on 15. That was the moment of the week for me, because we were up there kind of close to Sergio. And so to experience from that angle what he was seeing in terms of everybody just erupting on 15 and 16. And we couldn't see the ball, so you didn't know where it was. But to have that experience from that angle, I mean, and the swing that he put on that, and he held it for forever. Yeah. It was just, I don't know. That was an incredible shot. It was a career changing shot for him, and it was cool to watch it.
So there's three other things I want to ask you, and then I'll let you go. Do you understand? I know Padraig Harrington came out and kind of said some things about Sergio this week, where he called him a sore loser, and that's a guy that's been, you know, in the cauldron with Sergio. So I really value his opinion on that, and I'm glad that he said the things that he said. He's not really seemingly forgiven Sergio for the past. Do you understand people that still dislike Sergio?
Not fans, really. I feel like if you're a fan and you're holding on to Sergio hate, you're just kind of like not paying attention to the last 5 years. One of my friends, Carson Cunningham, who's a sports reporter in Oklahoma, he brought this up. He said Sergio for him is kind of like Kobe. Like, he was really likable at the beginning of his career, and then he became sort of like hated in the middle. And then at the end, you started to appreciate and like him again. And I thought that was a really good career arc parallel. I don't think that Sergio historically is as good as Kobe is at basketball, but in terms of personality, I thought that was a really good parallel. And I think he became a tragic figure. Like, how likable was he at the Ryder Cup, talking about the fan? I certainly know I don't have any majors, and like I just he seemed in his press conference after the Masters so like at peace that it was almost like his fan. It was almost like Adam Sarson needed the Sergio major more than Sergio actually needed it. And I'm not calling out, I mean, any of his fans, like, yeah. He didn't really seem to need it. Now, I'm sure he's delighted with it, but, I don't know. I think Sergio is incredibly likable, and you want unique figures in golf, and that's what he is.
Do you have any major takeaway? Does anything change for you on your outlook on Spieth based on this week?
No. He ran out of gas. I know I got vaporized for that take in our chat, but I think he expended so much energy on Friday afternoon and Saturday that he didn't have it on Sunday. It was weird. His take on it afterwards was weird because he said he's never felt more calm or more in control at Augusta. And he shot a 75, and it was like, well, I don't really understand. Like, I don't know if he just didn't hit any putts or what happened, but I don't take away anything besides the fact that he's finished in the top 15 four straight years.
I did find, I think he said something afterwards, like, you know, I'll get to come back here for the next 50 years. It seemed a little to me like he was kind of deflecting some of the potential criticism, you know, like kind of reminding people like it's fair because he should not be criticized for finishing T11 at the Masters, especially considering his history. But it's kind of like I've won one of these. Remember that, guys. Like, don't say anything about my performance on this Sunday. Did you hear that quote? See that quote? Or am I kind of imagining that?
No, he gets a little short sometimes. And I think that he wants everyone else to have the perspective that he has, yeah. and he tries to force that upon people a little bit. And rightfully, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't do the same. I probably would, but it doesn't come off, I think, as well as he intends it to.
All right. And then lastly, our guy, Rory, any takeaway from this week? Really good question. Really big, yeah. Like, detailed question I'm asking. Can you talk about Rory?
I mean, the drives that he's hitting, he should not be – I mean, he should be – in contention on Sunday, and he's not hitting good second shots. He's really not. You know, I thought this year was important for him because he didn't have, I think it was like six of the last 7 years, he's had at least one round of 77 or worse, and he didn't this year. My thing on Rory is this. I think that, you know, people keep saying over the next 10 or he's got 10 or 15 chances. He's got 20 more chances at this. And it's like, yeah, maybe. But here's the reality. He's going to get two or three or four real shots at it over the next 10 years, like really like leading by one with eight to go or leading after 54 holes or something like that. And he's got to capitalize on those because you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to be in the hunt 10 times over the next 10 years on Sunday, but you're going to get two or three or four of them. And you got to take advantage of at least one. And I think he knows that. And I think he will. But I don't know. It's got to be frustrating for him to hit 400-yard drives and make par.
I try to talk about this on the recap pod, and I know you haven't listened to it yet, and I don't think I did a great – first of all, it's 3 o'clock in the morning when I recorded it. And I left 15 seconds of dead air between the intro and when we started talking because it was – I literally posted it at 3:30 in the morning after that Masters. But trying to make the point that I'm not sure how much hitting at 390 at Augusta gives you an advantage. And what I mean in that it's such a – it's hard to make this take. Such an emphasis on the second shot on that course that if you're hitting wedge into 14 – or whatever he's hitting into two. Like let's take the second hole for example. When he was getting down that hill, and you know hitting a mid iron into it, one of the days he laid back and hit 3 wood from the top of the hill, and I think he like hit it on the green. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it was kind of like a you don't have to play from super far down the fairway to put yourself in a good position after two shots. Like, does that make any sense? So my point is I don't think the course sets up that great for him or somebody like DJ that are the true bombers, whereas somebody like Sergio Rose, and it's easy to default to those two that just finished one and two, but somebody like Spieth as well that just manage the ball more off the tee rather than bomb it and are maybe more in control of their distance with their irons are at a big advantage at Augusta. Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, but why is it easier to – or why is there no difference between hitting 4-iron and pitching wedge into two?
That's the hard part for me to explain that I can't really get it across. In my head it makes total sense, but I don't know how to say it. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean more like hitting it from 165 versus hitting from 140, like on 14 per se, doesn't give you that much of an advantage to hit it from 140 the way that you can't really – like the way the greens have played the last couple of years, you can't really spin the ball in there. You can't – so these guys maybe aren't necessarily used to when you're hitting a wedge into a green needing to plan for it to release, whereas if you're hitting 8-iron from 165 – you can, you know what the ball's going to do once it lands, and it's more predictable. I don't know. It's just kind of the sense I get, and the guys that are more I don't want to say in control of their ball flight, the guys that seemingly get it out of the air quicker. A guy like Rory hits his iron so high, he had a lot of trouble controlling the distance this entire week. Whereas I just never felt like Sergio or Rose were going to miss a shot in a bad place at all coming down the stretch, and I don't get the same feeling watching some of the true big bombers out there. I don't know if that makes sense, but
I think his wedge game is just kind of leaky right now. I mean, I think there is a point to be made that, like, and this is like a just kind of a tenet of you and I playing, but hit it to a spot where you're comfortable, whatever distance you're comfortable from. Like, if you like to hit it from 150 in to the green more than you like hitting it from 135, then take a club off on your tee shot or whatever the case is. And so I don't know, maybe that's it. Like, maybe he's not comfortable from 140 or whatever he's got into these greens, but it just seems to me like he needs to tighten up his wedge game. And I don't know, maybe there's a device that he could use that a number one player in the world has used before to improve his wedge game. I mean that's all it is to me. Like, I watched him on, I think it was on Saturday, he had a drive on 13 and he had 150 or 60 or something into the green at 13 and he just missed the green, and it just seems like just a bad wedge shot, you know. And obviously we are huge fans of Rory and think that he is going to win multiple more majors, but I think that he would agree that his wedge game needs to be tightened up, especially when you're hitting the ball like you are off the tee.
Plays Augusta National once and has all has it all figured out on how to play it and gives advice to Rory. I set you up for that one. All right, I wasn't planning on going a full hour, man, but I really enjoyed hearing about Augusta. I think the listeners will enjoy hearing about it as well. And congratulations on another great week covering a major and a life experience of getting to play that course. It's I don't know how to – jealousy is not the right word, though, just because I was super excited for you, and I'm glad you got that chance.
Well, I appreciate that. I've got a piece coming out on it that I hope everyone will read. And it was a really intimate experience that I am really glad to have had. And, it was an all-time week. It was – I feel like I say that after every major, Ryder Cup, whatever, but it's been a blast to cover the sport and to – meet all of you guys and to get to hang out at these. And I guess we'll be doing that again in about a month at the Players. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So, well, you're definitely suspended from the podcast at least until then. But I have a feeling we're going to be doing some stuff on site that week. It's going to be fun. So,
okay, sounds good, buddy.
Appreciate the time as always. I think going forward, we may actually have to have you start reading some of the ads on here because you're on here so much. So. But Kyle, thank you for the time, man, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, I use an Epic driver at Augusta, by the way, in case anybody.
All right, signing off on that. Cheers, man.
Be the right club today. Yes,
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most. Expect